really enjoyed the service this morning, and it did me a lot of good. I'm happy to be here. It seems to me that each time I start out on a journey on the highways of life today, I always begin that journey with a little prayer to the Lord that we will enjoy His protection and care as we travel on the dangerous highways. And I like to end it with a little prayer of thanksgiving that we have arrived safely, and even more joyously that we've arrived safely at a destination where we can meet together with those of like precious faith, where we can share our experiences and our testimony and the hope that's within us. Because I think that this is one of the things that is most lacking in society today, the hope that shines so brightly in the lives and is so meaningful in the lives of Christian men and women. I would like to read this evening some scriptures to you, and most of them come from the writings of Paul. However, I would like to remind you that, because I feel strongly, you know, that all too often we give more emphasis to the words and the writings of other people than we do to the one that we should be paying the most attention to, and that's Jesus Christ, our Lord. And yet I'd like to remind you that when we read the words of Paul, they have in many instances a very special place to the Christian. No, they're not word for word the beautiful teaching, the simple commandments of Jesus Christ. And yet I have to confess that I have great hope and faith and confidence in that testimony that Paul made to people wherever he was teaching. And that is that this gospel that he preached, he didn't get from this brother or from that brother. He didn't hear it from Mark. He didn't read it as Luke recorded it. He didn't get it from Matthew or from another. He didn't walk with Jesus himself. He didn't remember these many years and then endeavor to interpret the things that Jesus had taught. But rather he said always, and I firmly believe, that he received this word, this message, by the revelation of Jesus Christ. That's how he was taught. Not by the things that he'd read, not by what other people had told him, not by the interpretation of other people's ideas. There have been enough books to fill up the whole of Grand Mesa have been written about what Jesus said. But Paul had a far more beautiful and emphatic testimony, that he received this testimony by the revelation of Jesus Christ. He didn't get it secondhand. And so I cherish and I love to read most often the pure, simple words of Jesus Christ. And yet I really believe, as we listen to these exhortations of Paul and Peter and James, that by and large, this also is a simple, emphatic teaching of the Master of Men as it was revealed to the minds of those who were his disciples. And I'm just going to read as a text this evening, and then perhaps read other scriptures to elaborate upon this simple text, a few verses that Paul wrote to a young minister. And I was reminded of these verses this morning in our sacrament service during the testimony part of this sacrament service. There were several of our members, I believe they were the ones that I'm thinking, were all sisters in the gospel, who bore this testimony that there is a great responsibility that's placed upon the ministry of the church, but we have all been called to serve. You, sisters and brothers, just as much as members of the ministry that have been called. We have all been called into His service. We have all been called into His discipleship. We have all been called out of the world into this communion with God, this fellowship with Jesus Christ, that we might be instruments in His hand to bring to pass His work and His mission here on this earth. And therefore, Paul gives this exhortation to a young man who has just been called into the ministry. And I say it's equally appropriate to each brother or sister, young or old alike. And Paul tells him, these things command and teach. Let no man despise thy youth. Just because you're young, let no man think less of your testimony, of your example, of your communication, and he will not if we give heed to this admonition that he shares with Timothy. And it makes no difference whether it's our youth or whether it's your gender, your sex, or not. Let no one despise the fact that you're a woman believer, or that you're an elderly believer, or that you're a youthful believer. For we have been called into this fellowship to be brothers and sisters with Jesus Christ in this great work. You know, when he first began his ministry, he opened the scriptures there and he read from Isaiah, and he said that he had been called to do these many things. And he says, this day is it fulfilled. And now he turns that burden and that great responsibility over to that brotherhood of believers that have accepted him as their Lord and Savior. Let no one despise the fact that you're a woman, a girl, a boy, a young man, or an elderly person, but rather give heed to your testimony and to your example, because you follow this admonition of Paul. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity. I would like to have you think very carefully about these aspects of our Christian spiritual life. I believe that if I, as a minister, if you, as a brother or a sister of mine in this gospel, if we give attention to these aspects of our life, and if we, like those of the past who gave to us this great and beautiful heritage, if we are an example of the believers to all men and women that we come in contact with, no one will have reason to despise us or to think less of our testimony, to not give heed to it. If we give attention to our word, our conduct, our love, spirit, faith, and purity. In some versions, in some translations of the Bible, it says, be thou an example to the believers. In this particular edition of the Bible, it says, be thou an example of the believers. Well, sometimes, you know, a little word like that makes a wealth of difference, makes a lot of difference. But I don't think it does here in this instance. We're called to be examples to all those who look at our lives. We're called, Paul says, to be ambassadors of Jesus Christ. One time, I think it was the very first trip I ever made to Mexico, and I was with Brother Wheaton. We went to restaurant one morning to get our breakfast and wait the arrival of the train that we were going to take to another town, because we didn't have an automobile. And as we sat there in the restaurant, there appeared out on the street, I kind of hate to say it, an American citizen. And he gave such an appearance that everybody in the whole vicinity, you know, had their attention drawn to him. He wore one of those jungle helmets, and he had on shorts and hiking boots and big socks up to his knees, and he had a huge sheath knife about this long on his hip, and a big thing that looked like a watch, but it was a great big compass on his wrist, and he looked like Stanley off on an expedition, you know, to find Dr. Livingston or something. And here he was walking up the streets of one of the most modern cities in Mexico, you know, and he looked so ludicrous that everyone was looking. He was an ambassador of the United States of America. There's no getting around it. Every time we go somewhere in a foreign country, we are ambassadors that people will read like a book. And they're going to have their impression and their interpretation of the United States by the impression that we make upon them. And the impression this gentleman was making was pretty ludicrous. As a matter of fact, Brother Wheaton and I both got up and left the restaurant before he arrived there, because we'd seen him before, and he created a furor everywhere he went, and we didn't want to be associated with it. And Paul says that we are ambassadors for Jesus Christ, known and read by everyone that looks at us, everybody we encounter, the kids that we meet at school, the people we work with, our neighbors, our friends, strangers that we encounter in the department store or on the street or wherever we might happen to be. We represent Jesus Christ. And people are going to get their impression of Christ Church and of Christ people and of Christ Himself by the impression that we make and give. What a grave responsibility that is that falls upon our shoulders when we enter the waters of baptism. For we are ambassadors, known and read by all men. And so, if I will give my attention to my words, my conversation, my conduct, my purity, my faith, then the impression that I can give will be advantageous to the work of the gospel. And if, and to the degree that I fail to do so, then the impression that I give will be detrimental to the work of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And none of us wishes to be a detriment. Let's give our attention this evening to a few of the things that we might think of as we consider our word, our conduct, our love, spirit, faith, and purity. I think perhaps in his letter to the Ephesians, in chapter 4 and chapter 5, Paul talks a great deal about our conversation. And I really don't know where I would begin reading here in chapter 4. This is a beautiful passage of Scripture here where Paul is telling us how we as Christian members of the Church of Christ should have, as we entered the waters of baptism, shed off our old selves and our former conversation and manner of life and put on a new kind of person. The kind of person that is patterned after Jesus Christ Himself. The kind of person that's patterned after these early believers who gave us this Christian heritage that we have and enjoy. And he talks about ways in which we do this thing, that we're renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on a new man, which after Christ is created in righteousness. And then I guess I'll begin, since we're talking about our word, our conversation, I guess I'll begin reading with verse 29. He says, "Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth. Let no vile talk. Let no profane talk. Let no corrupt communication ever pass forth from your lips." Now that's kind of a hard thing to do sometimes. It's very difficult for many people in our nation who have risen to high places in our society and in our government to follow this simple injunction to let no corrupt communication pass forth off their lips, through their lips. "But that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers." And then in verse 31, "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you." In other words, sometime in our life, we might have said, thought all manner of things. We might have engaged in telling stories that are off color. We might have used profanity. We might have cursed. We might have been bitter. We might have spoken words which were harsh and condemning to others. But now that we are born again, we're going to put on a new man. And listen, it doesn't make any difference when you were baptized. It doesn't really make any difference if some of those attributes of our old earthly natural man are still with us and resident within us. This day is the day to begin to alter our life and ourself and our conversation so that anyone hearing the words that pass from our lips will know that we are a believer. And what a difference in your life it will make. I can honestly say that I know it will make a difference in your life. Perhaps you've heard me say before, and I'm going to say it again, even if you have. For many years as a teacher, you know, well, I'm kind of a, I guess in a way, kind of a timid, shy person. And I don't push myself too far and too hard among other people. And for many years as a teacher working in my school, I kind of thought that it was important, you know, to not push myself as who I really am, you know. As a minister of the Lord and as a Christian in the church that I believe in and some of the values that I hold very dear, I didn't talk about those things. And I didn't tell people about them at all until one time my principal's daughter died and I was asked to preach the funeral service. And because he had no church and he had no ministry that was close to him except myself, and he asked me to preach that funeral service. And with a degree of reluctance, I did so. And everyone that I knew in the community, and everyone that I knew in the school and the PTA was there. And I cannot begin to tell you the difference it made in my life. The difference and the joy that it made in my teaching. And then, of course, along came all the Yates kids and all the Kavanaugh kids that came to my school that knew who I was. And I can't tell you how much more careful you are about the things you say when people know who you are. It is important when you are at school. It's important when you are at work. It's important with the people that you mingle with that you, it's important for you that you let them know who you are and what you are. And you'll find yourself having more opportunities to help people. You'll find yourself having more opportunities where people will come and ask for help or for counsel or for advice. You'll find yourself being more careful about the things that you say and becoming a better person than you would have been if you kept all those things a kind of a deep secret inside of yourself. That's my own personal testimony, that we must speak those things which will let people know what we believe and what things we really believe in, and we will find that it makes a difference in our life. If people know that you're a Christian, they will use a different kind of language and talk about a different kind of subject around you than they would have otherwise. And many of you have found that that is true. And then I read these beautiful words here, that we are to be kind to one another. Now we show much of our kindness by the things that we say. Because by the things we say, we allow people to know that we are compassionate, that we have concern for them. We allow people to know that we care for them. We allow people to know that we are considerate of them, that we feel for them and their problems and their needs by the things we say. That's kindness. You know, it's really, that's a hard word to identify, being kind. But we do it, we are either kind or unkind, most often, by the words that pass from our lips. And Paul admonishes us in all the things that we say to be an example of the believers, to be compassionate, to be kind, to be tender-hearted, to allow people to know that we love them and that we forgive them, that we're concerned about them. Mothers and fathers, there's no gift greater than you can give to your children than to let them know that you love them and that you are concerned. There'll be times when you have to punish them. and they can take it and accept it if they know you love them and are concerned. There'll be times when you have to say no, and they'll accept it because they know you're concerned about them. And in this world today, as a school teacher, I can tell you, I have personal experience, I know that one of the greatest problems that young people in our world today are facing that causes all of the bad reactions that we sometimes associate with young people today is because they feel like no one cares. Mothers and fathers and teachers and ministers have not shown them by the things they say and the things they do that they are really concerned. And sometimes that concern is an admonition. Sometimes that concern is shown by saying, no, son, no, daughter, that wouldn't be good for you. And it makes all the difference in the world in children. It makes all the difference in the world in adults to have let people know that we are concerned about them, that we share their feelings, and that we have empathy for them and we have compassion for them. So of what things do we speak? We're not going to have bitterness. We're not going to speak in wrath, in anger, in clamor, no evil speaking, no corrupt communication, no dirty stories. What kind of things are we supposed to speak? Kind words, tender-hearted words. I like what he says in chapter 5 also in verse 19. Speak to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to God, giving thanks always. There are all kinds of wonderful things that we can talk about. All kinds of uplifting things that we can speak about to one another. And all too often, we choose other kinds of things. I like what Paul says in his letter to the Philippians in chapter 4. He reminds them, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, and in your conversation, here's a keynote, you know, above all, do you know the things you're saying are true? If not, don't say them. Whatever things are honest, whatever things are just, even if they're true, are they just? And are they honest? Are they fair to other people? If not, don't say them. Whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there be any virtue in your friends and your brothers and sisters and your uncles and aunts and cousins, think about these things. Talk about these things, not the unlovely and the unvirtuous things, not the things that we see wrong, not the condemnation. People don't need condemnation. People get too much condemnation. They need lifted. They need to have their virtues extolled. They need to feel important and of value and of worth. Speak about these things. Whatever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. Let this be the burden of our conversation. I drew this out of my Bible. It's a little advertisement I cut out of the newspaper some time ago because it kind of touched a little spot in my heart, you know. It shows a picture of a kind of a lonely-looking guy looking off into space, and the question is, how is it between you and God? It says, if he doesn't seem as close as he once did, who is it that's moved away? And of course, we know the answer to that, don't we? But today, you mix and mingle and rub shoulders with untold countless numbers of people who are kind of rootless, who are looking for something to grasp a hold of, to give them hope and strength and faith, because we live in a kind of a rotten world, you have to admit, you know. When you pick up the newspapers and you start out the morning with a breakfast and a cup of coffee or reading the newspaper or listening to the news on the way to work, it's kind of depressing. It's kind of disturbing. The world seems a little unkempt and a little rotten and like it's going a little bit to pot, so to speak. And there are loads of people that are looking for something that you really have at your fingertips. And they feel, you know, like the common religious philosophy today that maybe God really has kind of moved away out of the realm of human experience and just left this poor old rotten polluted world in the hands of men. And so if God doesn't seem as close as he once did, who is it that's moved? And we know that it's men who have moved away from him. Staying close to God with the help of the Bible has made life worth living for many people. Relying on his power and love, they have been healed and their problems have been solved. Every Wednesday in our church, people share experiences that show the value of keeping close to God. Could you come this Wednesday? I think that's kind of a neat little advertisement. Every Wednesday, every Sacrament Sunday, every reunion, we have people in the Church of Christ who meet together to share experiences that show the value of keeping close to God. I enjoyed this morning listening to your experiences. I enjoyed the testimonies that I heard. I enjoyed the testimony of a sister who told about finding an instance where she could show kindness by a little deed to a person who stood in need. I enjoyed the testimony of our young sister as she told about the close bond that she feels and loves in this little Church of Christ. I enjoyed the testimony of another sister who told about the responsibility that befalls those who have come into this gospel of Jesus Christ. I enjoy being able to meet together where people take the opportunity to speak to themselves about virtuous things, to uplift and upbuild and to help one another. And that is what Paul meant when he wrote to Timothy and he told him to be an example to the believers in word. He said as well to be an example of the believers in conduct. And I'm reminded of another place, another passage of Scripture, where Paul wrote a letter to the Corinthians. And in this second letter to his Corinthians in chapter 12, he kind of expresses this fear, you know, that he's almost afraid to go back there to Corinth where the church had been established because of what he's afraid he would find. You know, there are a lot of people in this world today that are believers. They like to call themselves believers. Sometimes they say, I'm a born-again believer. We hear a lot of people, lately there have been a lot of political candidates, that talk about being believers. Now, I don't really know how sincere their belief is, and many times we don't know when we hear people talking about what they think and what they believe and who they are. We don't really know what motives prompt them. And it isn't enough just to be a believer. It isn't enough just to say, I'm a believer. Jesus said that in the time of the end, when man shall stand before him at the judgment bar, there are going to be many that are going to say, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name? And in your name done many mighty works and miracles? And he's going to say to them, depart from me, you that work iniquity. Our belief is not enough. The words that we say is not enough. Our conduct is essential. And Paul tells us that we can't just be an example to people by the words we say. We've got to be an example to them by the lives we live. And that was the testimony of our sister this morning. By the lives we live, we must be examples to the people that are around us. Paul says it by our conduct. And now he writes to the church in Corinth. I hope that if he were alive today, he wouldn't write to the church in Phoenix or in Grand Junction or Independence or any other place and have to say this, I fear lest when I come, I'll not find you such as I would, and that I shall be found unto you such as you would not, lest there be debates and envying and wrath and strife and backbitings and whisperings and conceit and disorders. He was afraid to go among this church that he had helped establish. He had brought the gospel to these people, and he felt sort of like a father to them, a spiritual father to these people. Yet he was fearful to go back because of the reports that he'd heard that he would find this kind of conduct among the body of believers. wrath and disorder and strife and envy and backbiting and whispering and conceit and all kinds of things like that. Well, those things are the kind of things that are attributes of the world. They're the kind of conduct that we find among people of the world. You know, in Phoenix, I read a terrible thing in the newspaper the other morning before I left home. I read about a man who's on trial for his life. He's on trial for choking another man to death. And he choked the other man to death because they were watching a television program in which a reference to belief in God was made, and the second man ridiculed a belief in God, and it so infuriated the Christian believer that he choked him to death. Now, that's a kind of an extreme case, you know, but what I'm saying, I guess, is that the church that we go to, or what we profess, what we say we believe, certainly isn't as important as the overt kind of conduct that we demonstrate. That is most important. We've got to be examples in the words that we speak, but more importantly, it's got to be verified by the lives that we live, by the kind of conduct that we have. In his Ephesian letter, Paul talks about that kind of Christian conduct that we would have in chapter 4. He says, right at the very beginning, "I, therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of this vocation to which you're called." Walk worthy, live worthily, act worthily of being called an ambassador for Jesus Christ, with all lowliness and meekness, with long-suffering, forbearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Now that's Christian conduct. We are to be peaceable. We are to be forgiving. We are to be endeavoring to keep this unity that we feel one for another. We're to be long-suffering and humble and meek and filled with compassion and love one for another. In his letter to the Romans, I always kind of like the conclusions of Paul's letters, because it seems to me that he writes this long letter and then he just kind of summarizes all the wonderful things toward the conclusion of his letter. And in the 12th chapter of the book of Romans, we find these words here. And I'd like to read here all some verses, starting with verse 5. No, that I won't start there. I'll start with verse 9. This is the kind of conduct Paul expects and asks, Jesus asks, of Christian believers. Let love be without hypocrisy. You don't fake it. You don't feign love. You really feel it. And you have to show it. And I'm here to say that if there are members of this congregation that you would really and truthfully admit to yourself, you know, I really don't love that person the way I ought to, you can do something about it. You can change your attitude and your feeling, and you can really get to love any person, especially those of the household of faith. You can learn to love a person no matter how unlovable that person might seem to you. And so I know it's possible of those of the house of faith. One way, said Jesus Christ, is to pray for that person. Another way is to live for that person. Another way is to seek that person's friendship. Well, that's not the right word. Another way is to ask that person to help you. And you feel closer to the individual. Another way is to serve these individuals, and you will feel closer to them. And if we wish, you know, we can sit over here in one side of the chapel, or we can sit over in one corner of our pew, and we can talk about love, and we can talk about the gospel, and we can still leave out of our circle of love some brother or some sister, and we can do it if we wish. But if we do wish to do so, we are not living the gospel of Jesus Christ as a true believer, because we must love those of the household of faith. And that's a strong word, that love. We must love them. We must learn to, and we can do it. Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor that which is evil. Cling to the things which are good. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another, putting the welfare, the well-being of some brother, sister, mother, father, cousin, child before our own. That's what Paul means, in honor preferring one another. Not slothful in business. He touches every aspect of our human life and endeavors. You cannot in good conscience be an example of a Christian if we cheat or if we hold back in our work, in our business affair. If, like John here, you're a working man, you're going to, as a good Christian brother, you're going to give a full measure for that wage that you receive. If, on the other hand, you are an employer, you're going to be honest and give full measure for the work that is done. You know, if we would just deal justly with one another, we have no need in this world today for arbitrators, for union officials. We'd have no need today for courts of law. We'd have no need for all kinds of things that cause disaster in the lives of men and women, but it's because we do not deal justly with one another. If we're going to be a good Christian, we can't cheat on our income tax. On financial matters, we have to be honest and above board in everything that we do. And Paul infers that when he says, our conduct, we will not be slothful in our business affairs, but fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing diligently in prayer, distributing to the necessity of the saints, given to hospitality. Bless them that persecute you. Bless and curse not. Rejoice with those that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. Be of one mind. Be of the same mind one toward another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceit. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honestly in the sight of all men. You know, there was a time on this earth, we can read about it in the fourth book of Nephi. I think there's only one chapter there. But beginning on about verse 4, we can read about a time in this world when all men dealt honestly and justly one with another. And what a marvelous time it was. It said of them, as it describes that beautiful condition that they lived in for some 200 years, surely there could not be a happier people created by the hand of God than those people who learn to live and conduct themselves with love and honesty and justice one toward another and depend upon Jesus Christ. And that's what Paul says when he admonishes us to be an example of those believers in our conduct. And finally, he says, you know, that we're to be an example of believers in love. How much could be said about love? We can't really understand what love entails without reading Paul's letter to the Corinthians, where he describes charity or Christian love. And you can't really say to yourself or to the Lord, honestly, that you love your wife or your husband, your children or your parents, your brothers and sisters, the neighbors that you meet and share things with in this world, unless you fulfill that definition of love in your life. And it's a very difficult and a very complete definition of love. And let me say, just in conclusion about love, that Jesus himself, in the 13th chapter of St. John, Jesus tells us that this is really the ultimate test of discipleship. He says that all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love one for another. And that's what we're admonished to do, and that's what we're here to do in this world. That's what our hope is, that we will be an example of the believers, that others might look at our lives and know this is Christ Church. There's something different and unusual and peculiar about those little people that meet in that little group of people that meet in the little building out there on Orchard Mesa. What is it that's so different about them? They have love, unfeigned, complete for one another and for all men. And you know, Jesus said in this day and age in which we're living, we call it the last days, it's called a latter day, it's called it all kinds of things. I'm going to read what Peter called in just a moment as we conclude. But Jesus said that in this time in which we live, one of the keynotes of this time, he says in Matthew, he also says it in Luke, one of the keynotes of the world in this day is going to be that the love of many shall wax cold. Now that's the time in which we live. And he's not talking about the people out there in communist China. He's not talking about the people of Russia. He's not talking about the atheistic, animalistic religions of Africa. He's talking about those nations of people that call themselves nominally Christian people. And he said, the love of many shall wax cold. And we can see that happening in our world, in our society, in our nation today. Respect, law, and order, and love are waxing cold and growing weaker and weaker. So if our love, on contrast, grows stronger and brighter and more complete, the day will come when indeed we will stand out as a strange and a peculiar and unusual people. But our love is not yet that complete. My love, perhaps yours, has a long way to grow so that it not only encompasses those that I see here and know as my brothers and sisters, but all of those that I encounter, and have it exhibited as that same kind of love that Paul described in the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians. And speaking of conduct, let's just read what Peter said in 1 Peter chapter 2. Let's sum up this conduct here by reading verse 11 and 12. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as sojourners, people walking through this life and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your behavior honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works which they shall behold glorify God in the day of visitation. Now we live in that time of which he was speaking. If he wrote this letter and was inspired of the Lord to write these words, I feel that it was the Lord's intention that not only would those people have that word, but we who live in the day of the Lord's visitation would have this word that of maybe among all the things we should be doing, this is most important. More important than writing books, more important than writing music that might be sung by people all over the world, more important than memorizing the scripture, committing it all to memory, more important of all would be that people, Gentiles, the people around us who live in the world today, might by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of his visitation. Paul says to Timothy, be an example.